Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 188 featuring Dave Macy from Inc. Lon, he came to the office, seems like a while ago, but it's not that long, I guess, a few weeks ago.
Well, I mean, anything that happened before SIGGRAPH seems like...
Yeah, it was just before SIGGRAPH, so I think it almost like a day or so before SIGGRAPH. But it was really great to have him here. And Inc. is a very unique company. They do really unique things. What do you think about
that? Oh, yeah, just amazing work, super beautiful illustrations from a variety of different things. You know, automotive, I think, is maybe what they're known for, their specialty, but they also do a bit of architecture. Did an amazing piece on the kind of history of computing, which was beautiful. And then, of course, this last one, which is such a fun piece that we talked about quite a bit, which was the bloated motors, where they took these 1970s sort of unloved vehicles, British vehicles, and they sort of turned them into like a balloon, like when
inflated them
and they just flew away.
They're really... But what I love about them is they sort of give themselves a lot of freedom to be creative. And they really think about what that does to your soul. I mean, he mentions that several times on a podcast, and it was a really great, great thing to see that level of creativity sort of being encouraged in a company. So really great to have Dave here and to talk about the work of Inc. And we actually did a blog post about bloated motors, right?
Yeah, we should have that coming out in a couple of days.
So
it reminds me that we told him after SIGGRAPH we'd get back to him because we want to get some Inc. artwork in our in our office.
So. Yeah, they do beautiful they do beautiful billboards and stuff. Yeah. What's also cool is now they do a lot of short animations for animated billboards. So it's actually really fascinating work. All right, we'd have several announcements that I want to get into. The first one I want to talk about is the wireframes exhibit. So we have been working on this for a while, but tell people a little bit about that.
But now we're officially in panic mode.
Yeah, we're full on. It's coming out this Friday, and we have to do it
Saturday night.
Which is September 8th, by the way.
September 8th at the A plus D Museum downtown Los Angeles. A plus D stands for Architecture and Design, and it's going to be a 3-part show actually. So wireframes is one part, and it's about the history of architectural visualization. Starting probably, you know, the earliest piece that we have in there is from the early 70s, but really it kind of takes off into digital format in the early 80s. So you have some awesome pieces there, and then transition into a lot of different stories about architectural visualization of curated materials from, you know, a whole bunch of amazing artists and studios. And that should be awesome. It should be probably the biggest gallery of architectural visualization that's ever been produced.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing.
Also, at the same time, there are two other galleries going up inside of the same exhibit.
Yes.
One is for the CG Architect 3D Awards, which were just announced at D2 not that long ago. And so Jeff will be on hand to, you know, show people that gallery. And that'll have all that amazing work that's just been done, celebrating the 15-year anniversary of the CG Architect Awards. Then something that I've been working on as president of the ASAI this year is we have our Architecture and Perspective Gallery, our Architecture and Perspective 33 gallery that's also opening. So it'll be amazing illustrations from, you know, probably over 100 pieces. And those range in every type of medium, you know, from pencil sketches to, you know, to full on visualization. So,
an ASAI, just for people who know, is the American Society of Architectural Illustrators, right?
Yes. Which is an international society.
It is an international society. Yes.
Open to everyone.
It just started its name that way. But it's a really great society. And I was actually at the event last year and did a talk for it. And really, really great people who are involved in that. And, you know, perspectives is a great name because it gives you a lot of perspective into all the different mediums and different ways to do it.
So if anybody has ever liked architectural visualization or illustration, this is the exhibit to go to.
Yeah.
It'll be open till November 25th. So you couple of months to be able to do it.
Right. So again, that's at the A plus D Museum in downtown LA. Other things that are going on as well, soon, I'm trying to go slightly chronologically, but I may miss it. V-Ray Days in Australia is happening. So if you happen to be down in Australia or you're living down there, I shouldn't say down there. You know, it's a sphere, but there's no gravity. You still stand upright.
Well, I mean, it's the whole down under thing that maybe makes you say it.
But we're actually going to be in Sydney and Melbourne. So on September 10th at the Powerhouse Museum in Sydney, we'll be having V-Ray Days there, and on September 12th at the ACMI in Melbourne. So definitely, if you're in Australia and you have a chance to go see V-Ray Days, it'd be great to see you guys and let us know how that goes. Another thing that's happening is Basecamp. Long, why don't you tell me a little bit about Basecamp?
Yeah, so this year it looks like, I think it happens not every year. I think it's every 18 months that SketchUp has their Basecamp gathering. Mm-hmm. And this year it looks like it's going to be the biggest one they've had in history.
Awesome.
You know, usually it was a few hundred people. I think they're going to have 1,200 people now.
Oh, wow.
And it's happening in Palm Springs, which is a nice kind of an easy drive for us.
So. Yeah.
I'm sure I'll be, driving some computers there for the render challenge and so on.
Yeah.
But we have some, Boris and Constantine are coming in from the Sophia office to talk about the latest developments in V-Ray for SketchUp,
mm-hmm.
and show off some really great stuff there. We're also telling people about the cloud, the V-Ray cloud, which is in beta for anybody that wants to try it.
And that's not just for SketchUp. That's for
it's for, yeah, anyone. It's for all V-Ray. But we'll be talking about it there,
mm-hmm.
and looking forward to it. It's September, I believe, 24th to 28th.
Yep.
So it's a few days. There's going to be master classes and, all kinds of excellent stuff.
Yeah. So if you're going to Basecamp, we look forward to seeing you there for sure. Now, last thing for events that I'm going to mention is THU. I will be at THU. You guys all know how I feel about that event. I love it. But one of the things I'm going to be doing there is I'm going to be hosting a series of panels for 3 days. I'll be doing a panel. I believe it starts at like 11:30 or midnight because it is THU. But the panel's subjects are going to be art, creativity versus technology. And I think it's going to be really interesting because one of the things that I've been helping Andre with is bringing people from the technology perspective to THU and seeing how we can sort of bridge that gap, because a lot of events, like for example, SIGGRAPH is really great focused on technology, but it doesn't really sort of address it from the idea of how does technology help the creative process. And I think with a THU crowd, it's going to be very different. So really looking forward to that as well. All right. Well, thanks so much, Lon. It looks like we have a lot of stuff going on, and we always do. But hopefully you guys can enjoy this amazing podcast with Dave Macy from Inc. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're going to fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I still get Christmas cards from the foam company, from Foam Mart, after going in there and purchasing basically a truck full of egg crate.
But it works really well. It's a cool, I like the map as well. It's like, can we V-Ray take over the world?
Kind of sideways map there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. All right, hold on.
Was there anything in particular that you were excited about that you wanted to talk about, or do you want to just...
Can you tell us why you're in town?
I can definitely, in terms of what, there's lots of things I'm excited about.
Yeah.
Where does it stop? But why I'm in town is we started as a small company,
How long ago was that? Let's start
with. Well, we started in 2009.
Okay.
And, myself and Carmen started the company.
Yeah.
We got made redundant in the big crash of 2008. And
redundant from what?
We were working for a company. We were working in architecture visualization
okay.
at the time.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I was doing that just to get my motion graphics better. Learn 3D. Mm. It was a good way to learn CG. And I still say it is today. Doing ArcViz is the best way to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're a generalist, right?
Like, yeah.
That is the definition of a generalist at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be surprised how many ArcViz guys went into visual effects. So there's tons of like Arfgas people that came from that because of specifically that skill set, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did it just because to get my motion graphics better. And the good thing with ArcViz is that you have to learn to light, you have to learn to render, set up compositions, then comp it. Yep. You don't have a lot of time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a good, you know, kind of natural first step into the CG industry.
Yeah.
And so I started doing that, but I was able to do other bits of animation as well. And when the crash happened, you know, we thought we could have worked for other companies, gone on to do other things, but Carmen and I, and thought would give it a go. And we had this one little animation job. Carmen built a computer for me, and his one was kind of a one he kind of botched together himself. And we had these two little computers in a little free office in the West End of London. And we did the animation project, this little animation project, this little kind of 2D, sort of 3D style. Mm-hmm. That was all the, that was kind of all in fashion then. Mm-hmm. And it went really well. And then someone saw that animation and said, can I have one of them? And then after that, it's kind of, you, next minute you've got three or four projects you're doing.
Right.
And then you need some help. So you get your friends to help you.
Right.
And your friends want a job. And then they start working with you. And before you know it, you then got a business.
Yeah,
you
your know. Proper company at that point.
Yeah, there's a point. There's not one point where you think, oh, we're having a Christmas party and we have project managers. And, you know, it's kind of, it's grown really organically for us as a studio. And it's definitely, we've done work. People have seen that project and said, "Oh, can we do something similar, or can we work together?" And that's the way we've marketed ourselves. And it's taken longer to kind of grow the company, but it's been more authentic. You know, we've definitely met people that like our style, like what we do, like the way we work. And this is kind of how we ended up in America. That we did one job out here, uh-huh. and someone heard about it, went well, and then next minute we've got three or four jobs here, and. You know, it's kind of this nice natural sort of growth for right. the company.
And the style, I mean, one of the things that I love about the work that you guys do is that style, it feels like this signature simplicity, right? There's this
yep.
kind of authenticity or beauty to each of the elements you capture. How hard is it to like, to I mean, that's a tough signature style to have, it seems, because... simplicity's hard.
sometimes it just like, well, that was simple and it was really easy.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, well, it's funny because really that, you know, the ethos of the studio is the technical and the beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, that encapsulates so many different things. So for example, what excites me when I, you know, when I'm rendering something or working with a piece of software, there's definitely obviously a whole heap of technical stuff that is associated with that. But in terms of what you create with it and what you do with it, is it always like the output is an element of beauty to it. It's the same thing with a car.
Right.
You know, it's a highly technical object, but, you know, there's the beauty side of it as well. So the culture of the business is, or the studio is, you know, how do you combine these two together? And for us, going back to our style, is that we feel comfortable in both areas. And we kind of champion that and trying to bring that. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. And when we create work, is think of those two components together.
But you guys aren't really... an ArcViz company, right? And you're not, you are a different kind of company. And it's just really hard to put my finger on how I would say what kind of company you are, and maybe that's a good thing. So what would you call yourself as a, if people say, okay, what kind of work do you do?
Well, we're a creative studio.
You're a creative studio.
So we are quite comfortable making our own work, right. making our own stuff. And we're quite happy just working for people, working for photographers, working for directors, working with architects. I mean, generally, as a creative, you get, for me, when I was working for a company, I'd get bored quite easily because you just do that one thing over and over again. And yep. you want a new challenge. You want to try new toys. You want to try a new style or just meet someone new to work with. And this is what's special about Ink is that we are, you know, we it's very hard to pigeonhole us. That's what we do in terms of, we still have a lot of architecture clients, you know, especially on the stadium side. We do a lot of work with Populous mm-hmm. on stadiums.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's a great, you know, we've worked with those guys since the day we started. They were like our second client.
Mm-hmm. And did that come from your previous jobs that you gotten or?
Yeah, I think so. I think that came about just through, someone still had my mobile number on their phone and he had left to another company and the other company had gone, had kind of folded because of right. the crash. So all the people that were working were still, it was a very much a freelance market then. So you'd get a phone call off your mobile of someone that you worked with years ago and say, oh, I need some images doing.
Right.
You know, and it was a nice time to work. It was the money that, you know, everyone was skint, but it was a nice time to do, you know, right. to work. But I mean, in terms of the work we do is born of our passions. So it might be architecture, it might be product, it might be cars. Obviously, personally, I'm really passionate about cars. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in, you know, same as James, you know, my other business partner, who's the art director at Inc., you know, deeply passionate about cars and transportation in general, whether that's, you know, airplanes, right. boats, you know, anything that moves fast and looks good is kind of like something that, you know, definitely there's a passion for.
And I love the, you guys put together some series recently, like a book series of the all white cars and the white yeah. background and the cars, the models that you guys are picking of cars are just so iconic, so beautiful. What's that conversation like? How do you even get to that point where like, this is the one that we're gonna show?
Well, it's funny, that whole, again, nothing is ever planned.
Yeah.
Nothing's ever planned, like, well, that's what we're gonna do. Like, I went to my cousin, who's a car designer, he got me some tickets to go to Le Mans. And we went to Le Mans together, and we had this amazing weekend. We went to, you know, Classic Le Mans, and I just, you know, I was just looking at the cars, and I was thinking, well, it'd be cool to do something with them. So when I got back to the studio, I found like Le Mans was a real inspiring event. You know, we had a full VIP weekend there. So yeah. we got really up close to all the cars. And when we got back to the studio, James and I started working on some ideas. We wanted to do something with a 917 and just do something cool with it. And so we try on all these different things, like this very dark scene and, you know, just like rim light in all the body shell. But ultimately what it came down to is we were just experimenting and we saw some kind of renders, just some chalk renders, and it kind of, oh, that looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
And we trying to put on some few graphics, it kind of looked busy, it didn't look right. We kept coming back to the little occluded chalks.
Right.
So it was like, oh.
Interesting.
And I always liked occluded chalk renders. And at the time, a lot of stuff was getting done in there.
That's interesting because I was looking at those renders and I was saying, you know, it's really very rare actually that people render white cars.
Yeah.
You know, white cars is not a traditional car render because most of what people try to do is they try to get a reflection in the car of, you know, yep. something specific, and you're not going to achieve that as strongly motivated, you know, because it's a white car. And you put it on a white background and it's not about the reflection, it's about the silhouette, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the simplicity of it. Like, you know, the best ideas are normally the simplest ideas.
Sure.
And, you know, when we're working on projects, if the idea doesn't come together quite quickly, generally I think maybe it's a bad idea. So,
sure.
You know, that was just like a simple accident that kind of, it looked cool. And then we did it. And then we put it out to a few kind of blogs and that, and people went crazy over them. And that's
yeah,
become
beautiful.
I mean, that became a calling card for us, that project. Mm-hmm. And we've met some amazing people and won some amazing jobs off of doing white cars.
Yeah.
And you know, and now internally for the studio, for us, it's a little bit of a, we do one once or twice a year. We sell them on a website called Petrolicious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they're selling on Petrolicious, and now there's a cult following. And again, there's, from a commercial point of view, like there's no reward at all financially, but for yourself, it's a lot of fun making them, and it kind of is like a calling card for like, well, this is the language of what we do, you know. So, but yeah, we've just done the 911, and we won't do another one till next. We normally do one a year.
Okay.
And we put the prints out there. And well,
we were just talking when you came in that we got to get some posters for the garage, get some artwork.
Yeah,
in
there'll be some in the post.
It'd be pretty awesome.
Just an idea. Have you ever heard of the 24-hour of Le Mans? Have you heard this?
Yeah.
Of the lemons?
Not the lemons.
They're lemons, but they call it Le Mans.
Right.
But they're all these real beat up like cars that have to be under a certain value or whatever that just can barely operate. And they have to race them for 24 hours or whatever.
It sounds brilliant.
And so these cars are really not in great shape. It's really fun. I think I do it in Vegas or somewhere like that. But that could be something really yep. cool for what you guys do is like really beat up cars, make them look beautiful.
Yeah. this sounds like a great idea. I'm just going to steal this right now.
Yeah. No, take it because you guys should do it.
Yeah. We just finished a little project actually. It's just, we released it 2 days ago actually. And this was from all the old cars of the 1970s.
Uh-huh.
We called it bloated motors.
I just saw a GIF on my news feed. Was that you guys?
Yeah, yeah. We just finished that.
I literally just watched that going, I wonder if you guys did that.
Yeah, we just did. So it's kind of we called it bloated motors, and it was kind of the unloved heroes of the 70s as such. You know, the
Pintos and stuff.
Well, we had the Allegro, the Princess, and the TR7.
Oh wow!
Which are all Britain. Yeah. So we're gonna do America next. So we're looking
for the Gremlin and all that stuff.
Yeah, the Gremlin. Do you know what? James sent me a link to the Gremlin this morning. He said, "This is the car we got to do next." Yeah,
that's a really ugly car.
It's kind of beautiful in like the worst way. Like there's something beautiful about it too.
Yeah, I mean, this is again. It comes like there's always an element of beauty to something.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
We're good. From us as a style, we like trying to find that. You know, we're not always successful doing that, but definitely, you know, that's normally the objective when we come into a project is, well, where's that element of beauty in something? And yeah, the bloated motors was just so much fun to work on.
Well, and the visuals was striking because, you know, it shows this old car and it's a, you know, a beautiful render of it. And all of a sudden it kind of blows up and turns into a balloon and floats away.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
You know, so it's very unexpected in terms of, you know, what's going to happen and the comedy of it. So you go, whoop, and it
yeah, it's definitely something definitely pleasing about watching it just inflate. And I mean, it came about like we're doing buildings. So we're doing inflatable buildings.
Okay.
Nice. And
like a bounce house.
Yeah, like basically it's like a bouncy castle. And, you know, my colleague in the studio, Mike, had been experimenting with some dynamics and, you know, we were just playing around with it. And well, I thought, that looks cool. And we then said, well, why don't we try some cars as well? And we had them actually contextualized in a scene and it looked really busy. Mm. So we said, well, why don't you just strip it all back, pair it all back, get it really simple. And it's just nice seeing something inflate. It's just something really nice. But, you know, the guys in the studio that worked on the project did an incredible job of, like, from the lighting, from the, you know, getting all the dynamics and the inflation right. And, yeah, it just came together really simply. And now, you know, we put it out 2 days ago and it's had, you know, been received really well.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know.
It's amazing that you've formed a you know, an agency or a creative group that can do that. You know, because I think it's a lot of people think of that as something that they'll do on their spare time for a passion project, et cetera. But it seems like your company is able to just make those things happen and get people's attention that way.
Yeah, I mean, I find with our clients now, you can get up a massive campaign for Audi or Toyota, and they'll expect that in your portfolio anyway. So they'll expect to see that work anyway, really well produced, really nicely executed. And so that's something you have to have anyway.
Right.
But what people are looking for now is, you know, what the saying we have in the studio at the moment right now is like, we've got to show stuff that hasn't been seen before. So the objective is like, well, how can we come up with something that hasn't been seen before?
Right.
And what we're finding is when we present this to our clients or potential clients, they engage with it really well because they haven't seen it before. It's something new. Mm-hmm. And straight away they can think, you know, it's something they haven't seen every day. And this is a change we've definitely seen in the last kind of 2 years.
Interesting.
So that's why, I mean, we've had the workshop side of the business. We call it the Ink Workshop. Mm-hmm. And it was really born out of when I used to work for a company, I always had my own ideas, but I could never get any time in the company to do it. They'd never give me any time. Mm. So I thought, well, if I had my own company, we're going to definitely
make time.
Yeah, we're going to make time for it because that's why, you know, that's what's the fun bit. And sometimes we don't have time to do it for sure. Like we have to get you know, we obviously have targets to hit financially as a business and, mm-hmm. you know, all these things need to be, you know, accounted for. But generally, you know, since the day we started, we've always been doing our own work. And for me, it's quite important because it's the fun stuff. And it's also good for recognizing talent in the studio.
Yeah.
You know, you see people do things that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think they could do, you know, especially on the junior team. We have a very strong junior team in the company right now. And, you know, projects like this gives an opportunity to kind of get in parts that normally a senior person would maybe do. So for us.
Do you think that's something that you've seen as a company, right? So you've invested into this. And the question people is like, we don't have time for that because we have to do real work. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. Or some way someone could use those terms.
Client work.
But do you notice a return on investment on those things?
It's hard to gauge if we do. Yeah. All I know, I mean, maybe for your soul.
But you do get new customers, possibly.
Yeah.
New ideas. Right. Yeah.
It probably helps with, you know, your PR, marketing, recruitment, you know, camaraderie in the office, the studio culture, like all of those things that are sort of intangible.
Yep.
But I imagine that makes a big impact on, you know, just the morale.
Well, have you even seen a project like that that suddenly turned into a client project?
It's hard. I think it's one of those sort of things. It gives us a reason to kind of reach out and shout about what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a mixture of your commercial work and your workshop stuff. Like I've been over here meeting potential clients in LA,
mm-hmm.
and meeting some existing clients, and they love the fact that we're doing all this commercial stuff. And then it's nice to finish project. Well, we're doing this as well. You know, these are all the other things that are happening in the studio. And at the end of the day, we're a creative studio, so we have to create stuff. We have to create unique things.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of like, it doesn't matter if we don't get a client from it. We feel good when we do it. And
yeah, it certainly reinforces your creativity in some ways, right?
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, when we do it, like we do some R&D on it, and that will then inform. So it's not just the client commercial side. It's like the technical ability in the studio as well. Right. So if we, you know, all the inflation dynamics we've just been doing, I'm sure a brief will come in at some point.
That's going to become popular now. Everybody's going to do that brief.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's going to be, you know, because a lot of time we are, you know, clients ask us, well, have you done this before? Have you done that before? And sometimes they want to see it already done so they can just, you know.
React to it.
Yeah, react to it. And
or sometimes just rip it off.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, that's, yeah. But the, it's, so when they say, oh, have you done this? You know, we did a project for ASICS and, you know, the plain body cars, you know, that was a white shoe in a white environment, mm-hmm. you know, so it was great. We got a white car in a white environment. Well, that's a good pitch for,
right.
you know, so it does definitely, it definitely helps and it's good. It's good for the soul as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was a campaign that you guys had worked on that I thought was awesome. It was for like the history of computing.
Yeah.
And these really stunning images of basically every important computer back to, you know, whenever the first one was
like
built.
Like the old IBM ones and all that
stuff. All on a, you know, a solid color background. So it was a really graphic quality of it. Was that all retouched work or was that CG work? What did you guys do for that?
Well, firstly, I mean, that project was the brainchild of my business partner, James Ball. He's a photographer by trade, and he, you know, it was his idea, and he works under the name Docubyte. So he said, I've got this idea for computing, I'm doing it as Docubyte, but obviously him owning half, you know, of Ink as well,
yeah.
mm-hmm. it's all the retouch and post, and generally the studio assistance is done by us.
Mm-hmm.
So it was his idea, and he showed me, we're just literally walking down the street, and he just showed me a little mock-up, and I said, that is such a cool idea. I mean, I hadn't even thought of it, you know, computing, you know, obviously I'm into technology, but I hadn't even thought of the way he had done the mock-up was just really beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and his idea was like, look.
It's like a museum piece.
Yeah. I mean.
But virtual, like a virtual museum piece. It was beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I used to look up those machines on the internet, just geeking out on them. But this was, he basically connected it in terms of like, I'd put that on my wall. In our meeting room, we have two of those shots on our wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I could see, I mean, that's another thing, right? You could see like a big technology company, or an old technology, like an IBM. Like yep. imagine, you know, the lobby of IBM having this huge array and beautiful images in their lobby. It's an art piece, right?
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's part of history and it looks amazing.
It's a perfect example of the technical and the beautiful, those shots. You know, that really encapsulates kind of, you know, we have projects that really kind of tick all the boxes. That project is one of them.
Right.
And it was really good for us to, you know, because when we bring up in a presentation, oh, you're the guys that did them. Not a lot of people know that we're the guys that did that.
Mm,
and,
right.
You know, the way, you know, that's an ongoing project for him. And he's kind of, I think.
He's still going on with it.
Yeah, and it's still going. If you follow him on his Instagram feed, he's still doing those computers. You know, the original project we did, you know, we did as Ink and Docubyte.
Mm-hmm.
He's still going with it. So if you follow him on Instagram, you can track all the computers.
Nice, that's awesome. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, it's I think it's his mission to kind of just find every single old computer in the world. And, but yeah, no, that was a lot of work when we did it. They look simple. But, you know, obviously they were firstly shot, a lot of them were shot behind glass or in some sort of kind of dusty corner of a museum.
Right.
And then they get digitally rebuilt. And then we modeled proxy models for and then rendered all the shadows in and the environment in. So to get a nice contact shadow, that's right. all rendered. And then
that's a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what gives it the quality.
Right.
You know, fortunate side of this, you know, being a retouch studio and CG as well, we can kind of just, you know, cross over those kind of tool sets when we right. need them. And the team did such a great job of rebuilding them, but it looks so simple, but it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right.
So some of the retouching projects that I've seen you guys work on have this, like, I'm amazed when I see it, right? Because you strip away all the noise that's in a photograph and you're left with the jet or the, you know, just the things that really are meaningful in that image. They're usually high key looking images. Like, I've never seen that style anywhere before, but it makes perfect sense, especially, I don't know if the work was in like Wired or in some of the other like tech magazines and stuff like that. What are those projects like?
Well, again, going back to the white cars, we met a photographer called Benedict Redgrove. And for me, he and James, he was a big inspiration to us, like growing up, you know, in terms of being at university. And that would always look at his work and totally geek out at his work. And he kind of reached out to us when he saw our white cars. And so a lot of that style, a lot of those projects are working with Benedict.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he's a photographer. And, you know, we have very, you know, we have similar tastes. And like I said, we do a project, we meet someone, and we do a project together. So we've worked with Benedict for about 2 years now.
Wow.
And we get part of all his, you know, like, for example, the Trilab project was he shot everything. And then we did all the you know, retouching and rebuilding it. And like, we share the same taste visually in terms of our tastes. And that's how those projects come about. And we just, you know, we're just into the same things. He's got an amazing NASA project that we work with him on. And I think he's doing 50 years of NASA, where I'm not sure if you guys have seen that.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, no. You got your NASA t-shirts on. And
yeah.
I'm just thinking.
It was like, NASA Day at the office.
Yeah, you have NASA Day here. That's cool.
No.
I want NASA Day.
Well, it's an accident. We each actually own a lot of NASA shirts. So chances are that one of us, or sometimes two of us, are wearing a NASA shirt are pretty high.
Yeah, and Melissa, our creative director, she's probably the biggest NASA fan in our office.
Wow.
Right.
You should check out, I mean, the project we worked on, like Benedict's project with, past and present dreams of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working on that with him for about 2 years now. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, you should definitely go and check that out because it's an amazing project.
That sounds cool. So the fact that you guys obviously work very closely with photography and photographers, and you guys also do CG work, how have you felt the collaboration or cross-pollinization between those two fields?
It's kind of good because a lot of time if you're working with other creatives, not just photographers, you can be working with a director or creative director.
Mm-hmm.
Normally they don't know how to do it, but they have an idea. So it's kind of nice for us on the technical side of things to have the challenge to try and bring that to life.
Right.
And sometimes it's a challenge just kind of getting what's in their head translated into something visual, and then the client be happy as well.
Right.
So you have kind of these two dynamics from a directing point of view and then from a client point of view. And especially in advertising where deadlines is so short.
Right.
You normally only have one stab at everything to get it right. And it's a challenge, but it's a fun challenge. Like every project is unique. Normally it's like, well, how are we going to do this technically? How are we going to do it creatively? And then still make sure we fulfill the brief, you know, and then all the dynamics that go on with that.
Right.
Challenging, but good fun.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I just think that there's so much to learn, right? If you have a really good photographer there and you're a young CG guy, just to learn from that process of photography. And, you know, even the fact that, you know, for the computer project you guys were working on, you melded the two together, right? So you had to make things, the person doing the CG portion of it really had to understand everything about the photograph that they were working with, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for CG artists. I mean, I would say if you're a young CG artist, is buy a camera and go out and photograph things.
Yeah, because before you even start rendering.
Yeah, because you work out how light works, you work out how composition works.
Yep.
You know, it's super quick as well, because you can have, I mean, when I was at uni, you still have to develop your your shots, which makes me sound old now. I'm not that old.
Yep.
And basically, like, but you can have your picture straight away and you can, yeah, you can look at it straight away rather than like going through all the, you know, rendering something, you know. So, and you learn how things to look, and that's going to make your, it's going to make your you know, your work in practice technically better in CG.
Right.
Because you know what, how light works, you mm-hmm. know, you know what something looks like backlit, you know what something looks like when it's rim lit.
Right.
It's, so for me, any, you know, photography is like the first step in that process of becoming a good CG artist, because, you know, and then just because it informs so many different things. When you, if you know the physics of something, you know how light's going to fall, or, you know, we know what makes a good composition.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned automotive was something that you guys are, obviously you were very passionate about, and you guys are, have a, you know, very good reputation in that field. What are some of the other fields that you guys like to concentrate on?
Brand and advertising.
Brand and advertising.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's not quite as big as automotive, but definitely it's growing for us. Mm-hmm. Normally off the back of a project we finish. But we have to find that things that we get into, there's a relevance to us as a studio and we're authentically passionate about it.
Okay.
You know, we wouldn't necessarily, you know, what I'm finding as the studio grows is that the best projects we do are things that we're generally into.
Right.
You know, so if sometimes if we've had a few briefs that come our way and we straight away instinctively, it doesn't feel quite right because I don't know if we'll be the right studio for it. So, you know, naturally cars is our biggest passion, but, you know, some of the things, especially with technology now, yeah. some things that I wasn't necessarily interested in before, but what's happening with the technology that's maybe disrupting these.
So these, what has happened in technology?
I think there's a couple of areas, you know, it's hard for me to say because we are involved with projects right sure. now that I'd love to say, but I can't say because we're under NDA. So, right. But, you know, just generally like the way technology, especially robotics and AI mm-hmm. are two things that, you know, we're doing some bits in, and it's kind of hard. I can't say much more than that, but that's sure. exciting for us. You know, that's something that, you know, may take us down roads that we never thought would really go down.
By AI, do you mean like how AI is going to affect the world of computer graphics or?
Well, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, it could be, yeah. I hope it's not going to affect it negatively.
I don't see why that's a problem, though.
It's
because here's the thing that I think is interesting about the AI issue. A lot of people sit there and say, well, AI is going to take over my job. It's like, well, no, not necessarily. It may reduce the amount of skill that you need.
Yep.
Physical skill.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But you can still be very creative and the AI will help fill in the blanks for you.
Yeah. It'll buy you more time to be more creative.
Yeah,
yeah. This is I totally agree.
Because I think people are threatened by like, well, you know, I don't need to learn how to paint anymore or mix paint because it's, you know, computers are going to kill that. Well, that never changed. Like, people are still making beautiful paintings
yep.
with a Wacom tablet and Photoshop, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that the lack of paint has killed painting.
I mean, for me, AI will just be another tool. It'll just be another tool we use. You know, it's the same way when, you know, CG started, you know.
Yep.
It's another tool you can use. You know, still the analog ways of doing things are still done. I saw, you know, beautiful stop motion Honda animation today.
Right.
You know, it was amazing. And it's just another tool that we can use and have fun with creatively. And I really, you know, especially the way CG's gone now, there's much more time now to be creative. There's much more, you know, it's nowhere near as complicated as when I first started in the industry, when you could just render three trees in a scene. That's all you could render.
Right.
You know, now you can render complete forests. You know, it's super quick times.
Right.
So it's just, for me, I always think technology is a positive thing. Free up more time to be creative and possibly more job opportunity as well.
Well, even just the, you know, the, I haven't seen the spot, but I'm imagining what the inflated cars would be like. I mean, that's almost like the technology helped you come up with the idea in a lot of
yeah.
ways, right?
Yeah.
So it's like if you didn't have a computer graphics, it'd be hard to come up with that idea in a way.
For right? sure. I mean, I can't imagine trying to do that physically. Imagine like someone like with a straw blowing up a little balloon.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds quite fun now trying to make that. But yeah.
Wasn't there a movie where they had like an inflated car and it just kind of deflated or something like that?
That was the alternative idea. Just do deflated cars. We did them inflating. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think it was something like Top Secret or something like that. Maybe they did something. Oh, no, that's something else. It doesn't matter. It's just the idea of, you know, that you're goofing around with a tool, which is how I'm assuming some of your workshop stuff is done, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's the like, fun stuff.
It's like, oh, I wonder what this button does in this setting or whatever. It's like, oh, there's a new feature. We should try it out.
Yep.
What do you want to do it on? I don't know. Let's blow up a car, right?
Yeah.
I shouldn't say it like that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Inflate.
But that is really interesting. Just the idea that you can think of technology as something that encourages creativity in a lot of ways.
No, it's definitely the goofing around and just playing with stuff is the best ideas come from. And it'd be great to have more time where we can just play and fiddle with the buttons and try stuff. You know, if it doesn't pay the rent, unfortunately. But again, going back to the workshop, that's why we have it there. So we can have that time, because that's normally when you find like the sort of magic little projects or the cool ideas and just experimenting. And it's fun because it takes, when we're doing stuff like that, it takes me back to when I first started, you know, the first time I rendered something or the first time I thought, wow, that was cool, seeing GI for the first time, you know. So it was... Yeah, and doing though, like the project we just finished, is feels just like, you know, when I was much younger, just sitting in my bedroom playing around with it.
Yeah, the spark is still there.
Yeah, right? That's the thing.
Creative spark.
That's the thing I'd never want to, you know, lose. And as a small studio, you know, small to medium sized studio, that's what we do. You can't. And I say to the guys, that's what we should be doing. You know.
Right. Yeah, and it's probably, you know, pretty interesting on your recruiting point of view, right? Because you guys are, you know, growing and you therefore always looking for new talent. It's got to be one of those things where like you try to find the person that does something like that and say the right mindset for the studio, right?
Yeah, I think when we recruit people, it's often a lot of time that they have one little bit in their portfolio, especially we have quite a strong focus on growing the youth team. You know, the younger team, and myself, Carmen and James, trying to mentor them into their first step in their career. Mm-hmm. And we've been really lucky getting some amazing, I mean, everyone at Inc is really amazing people and they work really, really hard and they're very talented.
Right.
But it's not always necessarily the work. It's also the attitude towards the work as well, in terms of like, you know, working as a team player and being committed to finishing a project. And because often a lot of times CG projects are hard work. Mm-hmm. So having that sort of commitment to see something through is important. And then having like something, I often like, are you into something? You know, do you have a passion for something? You know, because a lot of the technical stuff they can train with the right attitude, you know, we can help them. We can, you know, this is part of our, you know, personally me, Carmen, James, in terms of like building future artists.
Right.
You know, that's something that's in a later part of our careers, this is what we're focusing on, you know, because the more effort we put into the guys, the better the studio will be, you know. So there's not one thing we look for, but normally if there was, it would be definitely the attitude and team player sort of mentality. And obviously being into what we do, you know, I wouldn't say someone who's into, you know, a certain style might not be suitable for Ink, but you don't necessarily have to be into kind of pared down minimal sort of look. You know, it's great. We do some other stuff, which is, you know, maximalist sort of, especially on the graphics and that side of things. And it's nice, you know, change it up and come in and do something different. And we've got a very good freelance community that we work with that come into the studio. They have different styles. They come in on a project if it's, you know, we don't have that skill set in, and it's great to have, you know, great to have that sort of, you know, this shown a new trick or a new style, or, you know, and the guys love that as well. So, you know, that's kind of my thinking around that sort of kind of idea. There's, you know,
I think there's something also really kind of interesting about, you know, obviously you guys must do a lot of print work as well, right? That's a big portion of what you do.
Print and animation. Right. Yeah. Normally a lot of time what we're seeing now is just we get both components of the campaign. So there'll be the print and there'll be the animation.
Okay.
But the fast, you know, animation is much faster growing in terms of print we're seeing as not quite as much work commissioned in print compared to animation now, just the way technology's going.
Interesting.
In digital billboards. So we often do the print
part. Billboards, right.
Yeah, we do the print part, and then there'll be a CG animated version of the print.
Interesting.
So, you know, that's in terms of working with us as a studio, is that, you know, some studios are just purely print and retouch.
Right.
You know, we have both capabilities. So we often find that we get the briefs which have both components to it.
And I guess because of that, there's got to be a huge amount that is influenced by social media, right?
Yeah.
So you guys are probably, like, a lot of your stuff ends up on Instagram or things like that, right?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, it's funny. Our first ever project we did for social media was in 2011.
Okay.
And we did it with Santander. And the brief was, you know, something cool for Facebook. You know, that's the brief.
Lily.
Yeah, that was what that was.
Do you know what the product was? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, the brief was, it was an amazing brief, to be honest. Working with them as a client, Santander were an amazing client, opened up loads of doors for us. You know?
We did
a little F1 film.
Oh, and, okay.
We had just finished a project for Silverstone.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Project. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. We did a little project. We did this really cool ArcViz film for Silverstone. And then Santander saw that and said, can we have something similar?
Okay.
And well, not something similar. We want to do something around Silverstone for F1. And we did this cool film. And the brief was just something for Facebook, and which was nice. These days when you get a whole list of all the
requisites, right?
Yeah, like everything is focused on, you know, on social now. It's like the biggest audience, you know, we get briefs in purely for social, right. You know, so it's been crazy to see that grow from, because we started the studio pre-Facebook, pre-Instagram, you know, when none of these things existed, you know, and we, you know, early days we'd do a four minute full CGI film for piece of content. Like now that would never get commissioned. Everything is under a minute now, 45 seconds,
right.
You know, with 30 odd shots in it. So, because everyone, just the way people are engaging with content now has, it's very fast. Everything has a very short shelf life.
Yeah, and you better get their attention in the first few seconds, right?
Yeah, and there's a good example of Bloated Motors being like just 3 seconds, 4 seconds, and it's something to talk about. And this is what's happening now with some of the briefs that are coming our way, is like everything is super quick and it has to be quite and simple and quick. You know, this is the you know, in terms of nothing kind of complicated, because they'd rather have volume now, you know, because they can constantly share, constantly make a noise about it.
So they also, do you think they also, because of the way social media works now, where in way more specific than ever before, you can target a specific demographic or age or whatever you want to do, right? And you can say, I want something that's going to exactly appeal to, you know, millennials and you know
centennials
whatever it is, right? So you want those specific types of groups where they can just go, make me something that fits that, like something. Do you see that more often? Because I mean, compared to a TV commercial now, they have to make it general enough that it's going to appeal to most people, right?
We don't get briefed into that. There's definitely an audience. They'll be in a target audience.
Okay.
So if there's a certain car coming out, they'll be like, well, the car company are targeting towards this age group.
Okay.
And that's, as soon as you get briefed that, that's the thinking for how you're approaching it. At least you know that's the audience. So it's important to know
who the audience.
Yeah, who the audience is. Right. And it's helpful for us to have that, you know, have that briefing in, you know, because definitely with cars, like, you know, a millennial has definitely been, lots of briefs come in, like we're targeting it there. Mm-hmm. And then now with the centennials is kind of a different thing altogether.
Who are the centennials?
I don't know what the official term is for it, because it's always changing. So okay. I certainly am not one of them. So, I think in the way briefs are is the, I've lost where I am now.
The briefs of the age of the people?
You can cut this bit, can't you? Okay.
I understand, but it's just something that I find fascinating, because there is a different kind of content that's being delivered now.
Yep.
And the way that content is driven, you know, when I was doing car commercials, it was literally car commercials that were on TV, and that was it. You know, and they were broad and they were spelt a specific thing. Now
it can be everything. It can be niche.
It can be very niche. It can be a few seconds.
Hyper-targeted.
A few seconds is a valid purpose of attention.
Maybe that's how our new demo reel should work.
Yeah. 6-second demo reels.
Yep.
Like Vines. Yeah.
it's funny we don't even do a demo reel now. This is it, because everyone asks us, have you got a project? When the brief comes in, have you got a project like this you've done before? And if you don't really have it, it's kind of, you know, I mean, the demo reel is, I used to always get really excited about when they're coming out, and I used to watch them from start to finish.
Yeah,
right.
And now I'm like, you know, 30 seconds, 20 seconds, and I'll switch it off. And, you know, so, but if I see something, one little thing that I really like,
yep.
And it might just be a small part of something, which is kind of sad, really, because probably a lot of good work is getting unseen. But yeah, I think this whole thing about doing long content is just, you know, but I think the exciting thing in terms of next step is kind of interactive animation, you know, how you can engage with something and not be, for me, the next step I'm seeing is like, you know, you walk past an electric, you know, digital billboard and you can interact with the animation. You can touch it. You can maybe be able to do something interesting with it. You know, for me, some of the things I've been seeing, it's like, I see that as a nice natural step where you can engage with it. Not necessarily for VR or AR, but just generally like a screen, and it reacts to you and does stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Wasn't there a billboard that they had somewhere, like was an animated billboard somewhere in New York subway or something, about someone who's a runner?
Was that a stop motion one?
It may have been stop motion.
Yeah, but where the train went down it.
The train, and well, it was something like, you were in the station, and they would be the runner would run at the speed, and you had to try to run as fast as that person, and see how much slower you are than this person. So everyone is like racing this billboard.
Yeah,
and it's kind of amazing, because it's all it was is just go beep beep. Beep, and then you'd like, you'd take off and you'd run, and you didn't actually interact with it except that you were running, because it didn't even know you were there. You know what I mean? There's nothing physical that you're touching except the fact that you're running with this billboard. So there's a lot of really creative ideas of things you can do. You know, you could think about, you know, all these. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, that side for me is kind of, we're definitely thinking around that area in terms of how can you start bringing interactivity into animation. Mm-hmm. Whether technology is there, I don't know. I don't know too much about what's happening in this, but some of the stuff I've seen have been, you know, really exciting.
Right.
Normally on Instagram.
Yeah. I mean, I've just noticed that, you know, because my son plays a lot of online video games, and I don't let him pay money to remove the ads, because I don't want to pay him all this money for something that he's not going to play. So I'm always sort of noticing the kind of ads that he gets between levels of the game. Mm-hmm. And the new trend now is, instead of actually just making a commercial, because there are always commercials for another game, right? That's just how he wants to play all these different games. They're starting to make these mini games as an ad.
Yeah.
So it's a small little portion of the game that you can play with between, as an ad. So it becomes like, it's you're, instead of just like, oh, another video of another commercial that I don't want to watch, it's like, oh yeah, well, let's see what happens if I do something. And so you're immediately engaged in that process.
Yep.
And that's kind of an interesting thing. So, I mean, we used to use the term back in the early 2000s, like called multimedia, was like the
multimedia. Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah,
I remember that. That was a new term, and it was multimedia. All like Flash and what was the other
director?
One? Director, right?
Macromedia,
like director. Macromedia director, yeah. Right? And that was for the non-technical people to make something slightly interactive.
Yeah, right? I mean, the first piece of animation software I did was Director.
Right.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was on an Amiga. Was my very first.
Yeah.
My very first piece of animation, but second piece was Director, uh-huh. which was bizarre because it's meant for CD-ROMs.
I know
it was meant like for making CD-ROMs.
It was a way to make an interface for CD-ROMs.
Yeah,
So
it's kind of, I mentioned to the guys in the office, and like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, damn it, I'm showing my age.
But do you remember, even in CD-ROMs, they were trying to put like some kind of a mini game in the menu somehow, something weird, right?
It's just bizarre. I used to get them in front of computer magazines and then stick them in my computer, and they'd have this little interface, and I'd be desperate to try and make one of those things, and I never could.
Yeah. You know?
So, but yeah, it's just, it's funny that sort of kind of level of engagement now. I think, you know, personally, I try and not have too much engagement with my phone and software, sure. just like constantly on it.
Sure.
So it's something, I guess, to be conscious, you know, not, you know, I think not be conscious of not too much engagement, you know, too much constantly on your phone or whatever.
But the car industry itself had already thought about this. They were making car configurators before yeah. anyone, right?
Yeah.
So you were making, designing your car and making it pretty and selecting interior and rotating around it and seeing what it looks like from different angles. When it still to this day never quite looks like the actual car, but
yep. I mean, I play with configurators all the time, especially when I'm speccing a new car. It's, uh-huh. it's kind of the configurators are the fun part. But you know, if that's the way we're going to be driving, I mean, I think the way cars are going is maybe the configurator will be less important in the future.
You think?
Yeah, I mean, the way cars are going, I think, is with autonomy. You know, autonomous cars, and you know, the way that's all going is, I think you'll be less bothered about your car. You'll be more bothered about your cabin experience.
Yeah.
So okay. What's your cabin going
to
be like?
Let's talk about this, because this is a fascinating subject to me, and I'm totally on board. And Lon and I have been talking about this for a while, and I think this is a really interesting thing, because you've been doing some electric car
yeah.
concept stuff.
Yeah, we do some stuff with Honda.
Yeah, which looked awesome. And I
love the design. That's a cool design.
Really yeah. cool. Yeah. And I think it fits your aesthetic so well to just yeah. make that. It's really awesome. But just that idea of where possibly cars could go in the future. I just got a new Tesla, but that may be,
I thought that was yours yeah. outside.
But that's probably the last, that may be the last car I own.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Because the act of owning a car may just not be financially
a thing
yeah. that's necessary anymore.
Well, I mean, when I'm here, I just Uber around.
Right.
Well, I have been birding it around as well.
Yeah.
On the
nice.
On
welcome
the,
to Southern California.
Yeah. You should explain what Bird is.
Yeah. So Bird is the new scooter.
It's an electric scooter.
New electric scooter company. There's two. There's Bird and there's Lime.
Lime. Don't. Well, yeah.
That are duking it out for, you know, scooter supremacy.
Mm-hmm. There's a war between the. Yeah. Who's going to. Are you on the Lime or on a Bird?
They're each.
Owned by like Uber and Lyft or, you know.
Yeah, but they're all over the place.
They're everywhere in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Well, they're not in the Valley, I'll tell you that. But they are definitely on the west side.
Yeah.
And you cannot walk seven steps without seeing yeah. a Bird.
Then they're convenient. They yeah. are.
And you just take your cell phone, you open up your Bird app, it'll say ride, and
you read a QR code.
You read a QR code of the car of the electric scooter, it'll unlock the scooter and you go where you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, it's like,
and then you stop and you unlock and lock it and you're done and you paid for what you use.
Yeah. It's super efficient way of getting around. There's sort of 2-3 mile hops. Mm-hmm. There's no parking involved. It's super efficient from a environment perspective. And it's another car off the road.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
But in terms of, you know, longer distance, obviously you can't travel like 50 miles on one of those things.
You can try.
Yeah.
You'd have to stop and get another Bird.
Get another charge, like big Bird marathon. But for me, the way I see things going is like people, when I talk about configurators, is that people are much more concerned about the cabin experience of the car.
Yeah.
And less about what it looks like. Because if car's going to go autonomous, you want it to be like your home. You know,
right.
you think more about the inside of your home than the
yeah.
exterior of your home.
There was a beautiful piece that was done, I think it was a Volvo concept, where they show the car basically pulls into the house
mm-hmm.
and it just becomes part of your living room,
yeah.
right? Like it opens up and it's like, this is just an extension of your house now. So you get into it. It
yep.
takes you where you want to go, but there's no reason that you can't still sit in that pod.
And do some work in there.
And do whatever you yeah. want to do. It's your home office.
This is the thinking, you know, from some of the clients we've been working with is you know, the car and the home need to be integrated as one.
Right.
And,
That's an interesting idea. I didn't think about that.
You know, it's the same way with the whole, you know, the way they're actually kind of designing the cars now is much more architectural. You know, much right. more, you know, not necessarily working with car designers, but working with architects or working with product designers,
mm-hmm.
you know, to kind of create sort of a more of a living style, you know, space. So, I mean, I love cars. So, you know, the whole idea for me, you know, not being able to drive a 911 or something like that kind of really makes me sad. But well, but it's got to, I mean, you can't
you just take your autonomous, you know, living room car to
it.
The track and then you drive it on the track and then
you well, the thing is, you know, someone said, you know, you have the 911 at weekends and
yeah.
and your autonomous car to go to work every day. You can do the first kind of emails.
What blows me away, though, is if you think about it, if you you're getting in an autonomous car like the one I just described, which is like, let's say it's just sort of a mobile office, you don't need an office. Like, you don't actually physically need to go to a place.
Yep.
Or the place that you go to, your office experience, imagine, you know, you get gang three or four of these pods up together or whatever. Like, it could be a whole different experience in terms of the real estate that you need.
Yep.
What's also very interesting, well, just back to this point, is some of the people who are investing the most into autonomous cars are not the automotive industry. The people who are investing the most are companies like AT&T and Google. Mm-hmm. And the reason they're doing that is because they're getting ready for the 5G network, right? Mm-hmm. Which is going to be fast enough to be able to get to level 5 autonomy or whatever they need to do. But it also is going to allow you to sit in the car, since you're not driving, to get delivered content by that.
Yeah,
telecom.
By the screens.
Yeah. By the screens, the right?
That's why the screens are getting bigger. So you can. It's another opportunity to engage with content. Whether right. that's you being sold to, or whether you're watching Netflix, or, you know, it's just another opportunity to engage with someone. If you can take driving away from that, you've got one extra person.
You can engage with,
and that might be sales.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're getting a whole lot of extra screen time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is the thing. This is why my personal opinion, why, you know, where there is such a, you know, strong push from the tech companies on really pushing this technology.
Yeah.
It's definitely lots of things happening, but going back to the birds is that's the kind of, what we're finding is like, you have a type of transportation that's suited for that trip. So going down to the coffee shop, which is a mile down the road, you don't need to take your car.
Right.
You can bird it down there, or you can ride your bike down there. Right. Whereas if you're, you know, traveling 100 miles and you want to do some work.
You can't look at a screen while you're doing that though.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I learned that the hard way.
Yep. But that is interesting. And that's also the other thing that you and I talked about is like our kids, Lon, which one of them is going to say, I don't need to learn to drive?
Right. You know, when is that no longer?
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point, actually.
Yeah, my daughter's 3, right? And I was in a panel for VRLA and I said, you know, part of the success of VR is predicated on our ability to lose our baggage, our preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. And one of those things is, with a 3-year-old in 13 years, does she need to learn how to drive? Is that a life skill that she's even going to care about?
Wow. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or owning a car.
Yeah, even like, owning, you know, a car.
You know, like, right. I think even now, yeah, certain teenagers, I mean, when I was a teenager, I know when you were a teenager, like the car was a symbolism of independence, right? Yep. It was like, yes,
yep,
all I want is a car from the age of like 10 or whatever. You imagined yourself driving. And then as you became, you know, closer to driving age, it was like, when I get that car, I can leave the house. I can go with my friends.
Freedom.
Freedom. Yeah, and now it's like, if autonomous cars happen, they'll be able to get into any car at the age of 10 or 12 or whatever. Which sounds scary, but it's an autonomous car.
Yeah.
You know, and at the same time, you know, it would be really nice if you have elderly parents that you're not worrying, is like, oh, how are they going to get around? It's like, they can just jump into any autonomous car. And
the way you use Uber here in LA, it's like super efficient. It's much cheaper here than it is in London.
Yep.
So, you know, you can be in the car for 45 minutes and cost you like $7 or something. You know, it's crazy. So even for me being here for like a week or so,
right,
it's still more efficient to Uber everywhere than it is to hire a car.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's,
especially with parking and, and it's way more convenient.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that's like a little insight to, you know, if that technology was a bit better and and the car was autonomous, that's how, that is really, the Ubering here in LA is kind of, for me, a bit of an insight to the next 20 years.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if all the cars are autonomous, right, and that means you're not driving anymore, that means you need way less parking, right? Because 96% of the time a car is parked.
Yeah, well, right? It's going to be being constantly used, so it'll just drop you off and go and collect the next person, same way an Uber works. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So that just changes a lot of the demographics of the city. I mean, visualizing everything becomes really different about that.
Sounds like a fun project to do, actually, seeing what it would be like.
Well, I think a lot of people are thinking of this. I haven't really seen someone make like an animation or a story or something.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the Hyperloop stuff. They kind of touch on
Hyperloop is one thing, right? And that's fine, which I also think is amazing. To some people, I think they find it very threatening.
Change always is, though, isn't it?
Right.
Change always is.
And control, the perception of control.
Right.
Right, where I'm no longer in control behind the wheel.
Yep.
Or there's not a human that's behind the wheel.
Yeah. But I mean, people had this, Elon Musk's, I heard a little talk from him. Actually, I was there live. It was amazing. It was the first time. This is the closest I've been to him physically that I could see him. But he was talking about that when people were talking about autonomous cars a while ago. This is like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And he said, well, you know, there was a time when people were terrified of automatic elevators.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you used to have an elevator operator, and just the idea that you would push a button and your elevator would magically go to the floor you wanted and stop seemed terrifying. Nowadays, you would never do that.
Yeah. And right? I mean, aren't jet airliners at this point pretty close?
I think they would use a pilot for 12 minutes of flight.
You know, pretty
I thought
close.
It was less than that.
It's like seven or something.
Something really, yeah. Really, really low.
And I don't think any of us have a problem, no. You know, with that. I'm glad that there is a redundancy.
I think I can tell now because the ride is significantly smoother.
Yeah.
Like it predicts the weather. It knows where to go around things. Yeah. You barely notice turns. I mean, we used to notice turns a lot before in planes and, you know, turbulence is like, I've had way less turbulence on a plane in the last, you know, 15 years than I've had before.
Well, yeah, I think it's just change, isn't it? You know, people always find, you know, tough to accept change. And for me personally, I just always embrace it. I always try and embrace it and look at it positively. But yeah, it's one thing has to do is, you know, you've got to get the cars off the 405. It's kind of crazy going down that road.
Yep.
So
405 is insane, isn't it?
Yeah, it's insane. So, and everyone, and the subject of conversation when I visit people here in LA is like, you know, what's the traffic like? You know, it's so, yeah, something has to change because you can't go on like this forever. And it can't be more cars on more roads.
And it's funny because there was a friend of mine who is from the UK and he came here and visited and he was talking about specifically that. It says, in London, the subject of conversation every day is the weather.
Yeah.
And since you guys have no change in weather in Los Angeles, the only thing you guys talk about is the traffic.
Traffic. Yeah. That is like the definite main subject. What's the traffic like? And yeah, you're right about London. It's like everyone talks about the weather.
Right.
And it's normally bad.
Right.
But it's very good at the moment. It's 35 degrees, I think.
That's nice. I mean, I know we went down a rabbit hole a little bit about, you know, the future of where things are going with cars, et cetera. But I really think, I mean, it seems up your wheelhouse because everything you guys do on your work has a very sort of futurist look to it. I mean, not literally futurist because that's a different style, but I mean, future looking, right? It's always about like the cool new look of something different that's going on.
Right. What's that end? It's that blend of art and technology, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's good. It's really good that you pick that up because it's what we're into.
Right.
I think what we realize is that we're either into really, really old things, very old things from the 60s or the 50s or the 60s.
Yeah, but you make them look like they're brand new. Like those computers that really are in mothballs.
Yeah.
They look like they're pristine and just got manufactured and like a beautiful, you know, I don't know. It's cool. It's really cool.
But it's, and then very much into the future. Very rarely are we into stuff that's happening now. So it's very much into the future, like 5 years from now or like 20, 30 years yesterday. And they're the things that kind of, and we talk about this in the studio, like, why are we into anything this minute right now? And I think it's because we're into the future. And like, we have a very optimistic look in terms of how technology is affecting the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the passion, we're into it. And, you know, so that's why I think it comes across always kind of nice and looks good, you know, because we're into it.
Have you read The Inevitable?
No.
Okay, Lon turned me on to this book, and it sounds like it's right up their alley of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I've got to read this.
It's about like the inevitable, like where new technology is going to lead us, and autonomous cars is part of it, and there's a bunch of other weird things in there, AI.
I'll send you a link.
Yeah, send me a link because this sounds really cool.
It's just, and it's written by one of the guys who founded Wired. So
it's
along those lines. And yeah, and I think even your, you know, when you look at a Wired magazine, it's always had that look to it. There's ooh, this is something that's, you know, from the, you know, slightly near future or a little more distant future or whatever. It always had that look that sort of broke from the 1950s sci-fi look to something clean and pristine and different. And with a pop of color or just pure white or whatever. And I think that you guys sort of have that a similar feel and look to things that may really sort of, there's an ooh, you say, yeah, internally cool. when you see the image, like, ooh.
That's cool. That's good. That's really good to know.
Yeah. So that's, I think, really cool about your work. And I think it's fascinating. So we're right. Actually, we're just over an hour, which is perfect. So mm-hmm. is there something that you can tease us or tell us to look forward to that we can look for? I know it's going to be tough. And you're sort of going,
Yeah, it's tough. I wish I'd be saying like, oh, there's a great new project coming, but
where can people follow you so they can find new things that come up?
I mean, I do our Instagram personally.
Okay.
So that's something. So following us on Instagram and then following our website, we've got some new projects coming out.
Okay.
So they'll be going up, and we've got two new workshop projects in production, and one's a bit left field. Might not be what you expect from us.
Okay.
Touching on the sort of kind of thinking around VR and AR.
All right.
So we've done two VR projects in the past past year.
Can people see those somewhere? Or?
We haven't released them yet, but they will be released.
Okay.
And it was a
bring them a Total Chaos next year.
Yeah, I should have brought them this year. I was here, which Total Chaos is actually amazing, by the way.
Thanks.
Yeah, there's four of us went this year to Total Chaos in Sofia.
Yeah.
And that event is just. It's just brilliant. Really, really inspiring.
Thanks so much. It was nice to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the first one and went to the second one. And it was just, it was just really, really cool. So
and thank you, the guys, for coming and presenting and showing all the great work.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
Absolute pleasure. And really we'll cool. be definitely at the next one and hopefully taking more people to come along to it.
Okay.
So,
let's do it.
We're excited about it.
I just wish Bulgaria had Uber.
Yeah.
I wish Bulgaria had Uber.
I'm surprised they don't.
They had it and then it went away.
They went away because of the cabs.
The little yellow cabs.
Yeah. But apparently I learned from Blago. Do you know Blago?
No.
He's our head developer for the GPU. He told me the secret of telling the which ones are the good cabs and which ones are the bad cabs.
Oh, wow. I need to know that.
Because there's some corrupt cab companies there.
Yeah.
But he's like, no. And he's like showing me. And then after a while, he was getting way too analytical and complicated. So I was like, just tell me the ones that I know for sure. but if you do, they're actually really cheap in cabs in Bulgaria. So,
yeah.
So,
I go to Bulgaria a lot because obviously we have a lot of friends there. And it's always it's a great city.
Yeah.
It's a great, great city. So,
yeah.
And the food is amazing.
Yes.
So, definitely next Total Chaos will be, looking forward to that date.
Awesome.
That sounds great. Well, thanks so much, Dan.
No, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you guys having me. It's a pleasure.
Glad you could stop in on your way to the airport.
Yeah. Airport next. Like, this is a perfect final drop. Great way to finish my trip.
Yeah. Perfect.
Awesome.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Much.